The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Developing story as we welcome you to NFL Live. Russell Wilson is frustrated with the Seahawks, isn't being shy about getting the message out. Let's walk through the timeline of how today is unfolded. This morning, Wilson appeared on the Dan Patrick Show and said this about his availability to be traded.
Yeah, I definitely believe they're getting calls for sure. I mean, I think that, anytime you're, a player that, tries to produce every week and has done it for, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question.
Ooh, so that was this morning. Then Russell Wilson calls an unscheduled press conference for this afternoon. Instead of walking back those previous comments, he doubles down, this time calling out his offensive line.
I think that the reality is that, I've definitely been hit, been sacked on almost 400 times, and so we got to get better. I got to find ways to get better too, and so just continue to try to find that. But I'm frustrated at getting hit too much. I'm frustrated at that part of it, At the end of the day, man, I'm frustrated, you want to win, You never want to get, hit, and sacked and all that stuff. I think, you want to be able to, eliminate those things. And like I said, I think that's part of the journey, So hopefully we can make sure that we do everything we can in that sense.
The plot officially thickened. Now, if you're wondering how possible it even is that Russell Wilson could be traded, don't worry. We'll get there momentarily. Welcome to the offseason, everyone. Not just any offseason either, right? Feels like this type of intrigue is only the beginning. I see Dan nodding his head out of the corner of my eye. Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears, and Nina Kimes here. Adam Schefter as well. And let's get right to Adam here. What's going on in Seattle, Adam? How should we read into all this?
Well, Russell Wilson did not shut the door on the idea that somehow perhaps he could be available. Now, again, most people would say, well, that can't be, can it? The fact of the matter is there's always been this little tap dance that's gone on between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks that dates back any number of years where Seattle perhaps has looked and Russell Wilson perhaps has looked. But obviously both sides are smart enough to know what each has meant to the other. But clearly, at this point in time, Russell Wilson is frustrated about a few different things. I think he's frustrated at the direction of the organization. He's frustrated with the protection he's gotten. And basically, when he comes out and says what he does and doesn't shut the door on the idea that perhaps he could be traded, which, by the way, Seattle controls, even though Russell Wilson has a no-trade clause, it just continues to add to the intrigue that is this offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Chris, we'll have it all covered right here on NFL Live every day at 4 Eastern. Mina, you're our resident Seahawks fan. What do you think about Russ's comments today? He's been all over the map on all this stuff.
Well, there's a lot to unpack, but I'll focus on what Russell focused on in his comments, which is the protection or lack thereof. He's been sacked nearly 400 times. I've watched every single one of them, winced at home. And I can tell you two things are true at the same time, which I realize is illegal in sports television, but I'm going to try to do it anyways. One of those things is that Russell Wilson, his style of play, invites pressure. It's a good example, actually, of why sacks are not a good way to measure offensive line performance on their own, because if a quarterback holds on to the football, often he's more likely to get sacked. We've seen this with both Wilson and, say, Deshaun Watson. It's what makes them special. The other thing, though, is despite the fact that Seattle did rank in the top 10 in pass block win rate this season, it's not a good offensive line, right? It's not well built. I would say outside of the trade for Dwayne Brown, which worked out really well, he's been excellent in Seattle. The draft picks, the free agent signings, they've not been successful. For the most part, you wonder why they get their butts kicked by the Rams every year? It's because they can't block on the inside versus Aaron Donald. The interior protection in particular was a disaster in the playoffs. So while I don't think Wilson is blameless for that high sack number, I don't think he's wrong to want to throw his weight around a little bit and perhaps invest more, especially on the inside of the offensive line.
Three names come to mind for me: Pete Carroll, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. Why Pete Carroll? Because I think Russell Wilson's sick and tired of playing for a defensive-minded head coach that isn't a forward thinker when it comes to offensive philosophy. Why Tom Brady? Because Tom Brady left a good situation in New England to go to a better situation in Tampa Bay. And as these quarterbacks that are really good and really proven get older, they're going to look at their situations after what Tom did. Now, Tom was in a trade, whatnot, but he structured his contract to get out if necessary. And they're going to look at some of these older established quarterbacks and go, wait, there's a better situation for me somewhere. Can I make it happen? It was so much easier for Tom to do because he had a loaded deck than the things that I have to do weekly. And then Aaron Rodgers. Look at the scheme that Aaron Rodgers gets to play in. How come I can't get to play in that type of offensive scheme that's all that play action and movement and throw the ball downfield and easy throws and a good offensive line and a good run game? So I think there's a lot of smoke to this fire.
Listen, man, first, Russ ain't going nowhere. That's number one. The second thing is I was going to go a whole nother direction, and I know our producer Mark right now is scratching his head like, oh, boy, about to eat up some time. I'm going to tell y'all this, though. I do not like Russ coming out publicly and saying he needs to be protected better. We understand it. We get it. But the dynamics of a locker room, man, that is the quickest way to fracture it, because he has old linemen on his team looking at him say that. And look, I know the relationship between them is better than the one that we see perception from the outside, but I just – that rubbed me the wrong way. That rubbed me the absolute wrong way. And I don't think that's how Russ moves on from the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know if it's something that he wanted to say publicly to put a message to them. But you also got to think about the guys that's hearing you say that, that look at you as the leader, look at you as the face of the franchise. And I will admit, I could be looking at it wrong, but I'm telling y'all right now, when I heard that play by Russell Wilson, that did not sit well with me on behalf of the guys that are up there trying to protect him from getting hit.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Russell Wilson, by the way, has been sacked 394 times in his career. That's the most in a player's first nine seasons since the 1970 merger. As Mina said, some of it's on him, some of it's on the O-line. Yeah. Adam, what else do you want to add?
Marcus, let's not make the mistake of saying that somebody is not going to go somewhere, because there were enough people that said the same thing about Tom Brady, and he went to Tampa Bay. Okay? Now, if Russell is going to go somewhere, and let's be very clear, Seattle doesn't want to move on from him. We got all that. But let's just say if he were to go somewhere, he's going to have to do some unpleasant things and say some unpleasant things and deliver some unpleasant messages and kind of man up a little
bit.
That's
the truth.
And so if he's poking the bear already, I think that's an indication of what he might be willing to do going forward, which is what he would have to do if he wants to shoot his way out of town. But don't say that somebody's not going anywhere, because that doesn't happen in the NFL.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually proof of Adam Schefter's love for Marcus Spears, because he's like, I'm going to make sure that my man doesn't look wrong here if something happens. Mina, let's get into the finances of this, though. Is it even possible financially when you look at the cap for Seattle for Russell Wilson to be traded?
So having just listened carefully to my much wiser colleague, Adam Schefter, I'm not going to say Russell Wilson's never moving. I will not say that. But I will say it would be bonkers from a cap perspective for Seattle. We're talking about a $39 million cap hit if they traded him. I don't care what kind of package you get of picks for him. The only reason you take that kind of hit in exchange for a haul is if you think your team is a disaster. Frankly, Houston might be considering that right now. That's a terrible football team. Seattle is not a terrible football team. So from a team perspective, this would be a terrible decision.
Adam, last word.
Well, again, we're in the offseason where teams are taking cap hits. The Rams took a $22 million cap hit. The Eagles are preparing to take a $30 million cap hit. We are in unprecedented waters, and the more that things change, the more likely they're going to continue to keep on changing.
Oh, spicy. All right, over the last two seasons, Russell Wilson has been pressured on 36.5% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate in the league over that span, just ahead of Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Daniel Jones. But a big reason for that pressure has been Wilson holding on to the ball, as both him and Allen rank in the top five in longest average time to pass over that span. Lots of news today, and we'll get to a lot of it, but some really sad news as well. We lost a football legend, Marty Schottenheimer. We remember his life and legacy next on NFL Live. Stay with us.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Legendary NFL coach Marty Schottenheimer peacefully passed away Monday in Charlotte, North Carolina, after a six-year battle with Alzheimer's. The football world mourns with his family. His impact was felt by so many.
It's one play at a time. When it's over, and go to the next one. It's the only play you can do anything about. One play at a time, one game at a time, one step at a time.
Marty Schottenheimer used this simple credo to guide his teams to 218 career regular and postseason wins as an NFL head coach, as well as 8 division titles. His first shot as a head coach came when he replaced the Browns' Sam Ratigliano midway through the 1984 season. Over the next 4 seasons, he would lead Cleveland to 3 division titles behind the ground-heavy Marty Ball offense.
There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. Let's get the gleam, all right? Let's go.
Those teams would reach the AFC title game twice, but both ended in last-second heartbreak. The first in 1986, when John Elway led the Broncos on the drive.
Fires over the middle, rolling catch for a touchdown, and the Broncos have gone 98 yards.
And a year later, also against Denver, Ernest Byner's fumble at the 1-yard line ended the potential game-tying score for the Browns. Schottenheimer and the Browns parted ways after the 1988 season, and Marty moved to Kansas City. The Chiefs turned into Super Bowl contenders.
And whatever you do in life, whether it's this or anything else, if you play with your heart, if you work with your heart, there's nothing you can't accomplish.
Lord, you can take me now.
But as close as they got to the big game was in 1993, when they lost to the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship. Schottenheimer resigned his post in KC after the 1998 season and joined ESPN for 2 years.
I think you hit the nail right on the head, Mark, when you talk about the matchups, because that's clearly, in my opinion, where the problem rests.
He returned to coaching in 2001 with Washington. But despite narrowly missing the playoffs, owner Dan Snyder fired Schottenheimer after 1 season. Marty moved west to work his magic in reviving the Chargers. By year 3, they won their first of 2 division titles.
I spent 9 years with the San Diego Chargers. Marty Schottenheimer was the best coach I ever had. Marty, would you and your wife, Pat, please stand to be acknowledged?
After his 2006 Chargers finished with an NFL-best 14-2 record, San Diego team president Dean Spanos fired Schottenheimer due to a reported rift between the head coach and general manager A.J. Smith. After a 5-year layoff, Marty joined the UFL's Virginia Destroyers in 2011, where he won his first championship at age 68. It was the same year when Marty announced that he was battling Alzheimer's, with his wife, Pat, by his side.
We don't hide it. We tell everybody that Marty has Alzheimer's. We're not ashamed of it. You can't go beyond one day. You cannot plan, because you don't know what's coming next. So we absolutely live one day at a time.
Life is good. My life is good. I love football. I love coaching it. but they all pale in comparison to the one I love the most. That one. My wife.
Now Lewis Riddick joining us to share his thoughts about Coach Schottenheimer. And he was somebody who had an impact on you, an impact on so many. But Lewis, what can you tell us about what Marty Schottenheimer meant to you?
Yeah, Laura, I mean, I had just gotten into scouting in 2001 when Marty was hired in Washington in January of that year. I got into scouting in June, July of that year under John Schneider, who was the head of the personnel department, but Coach Schottenheimer was the head of obviously the football team and the football operation overall. And right away, having been around him in those times in Washington, you just saw just how credible and competent he was as a coach and how he just positively impacted everybody that he came across. The only negative to being around him was that I wasn't around him longer, because he got fired then basically about 6-7 months later at the end of that season, after having rallied the team back from starting 0-5 to win 8 out of our last 11 and just narrowly missed the playoffs. And he just had a big, big presence, a big voice, a lot of emotion and compassion and empathy for the players and everyone in the building. And I remember when he got fired, I remember talking to him on the phone and then seeing him at his house, and he gathered everyone together and he basically apologized for the fact that he wasn't going to be around us longer. And you just knew that he was going to obviously land on his feet. He went to San Diego then a short time after that. But it was just, I remember leaving his house feeling so dejected that I wasn't around one of the great leaders and the great coaches and mentors that this game has ever seen. And in those 6 months, though, I just saw what it meant to really be a leader and command men and have people follow you and have them on the right track. And it's a shame. My heart goes out to his family. It's a tremendous loss, personally and professionally.
Yeah, so well said. Thank you so much, Lewis, for sharing your thoughts on Coach Schottenheimer.
You bet. Thank you.
Schottenheimer's coaching tree includes 4 Super Bowl winning head coaches in Tony Dungy, Bill Cowher, Bruce Arians, and Mike McCarthy, as well as some other notable names like Herm Edwards, Wade Phillips, and Art Shell. Clearly, he left a lasting impact on the game and the coaches and players around him. Marcus, you briefly crossed paths with Coach Schottenheimer during the pre-draft process. Excuse me. Tell us about that.
Yeah, took a trip out to San Diego, and they were converting over to a 3-4 defense, a scheme that was kind of taking hold in the NFL. And I met with Coach Schottenheimer for about an hour and a half. We went through film of my play at LSU. We talked about scheme. We talked about the level of work that it was going to take to have success. And obviously he did in San Diego. But I remember just feeling like you're around one of the giants of football. He coached Derek Thomas. And then later on, I think that following year, 06 was his last season in San Diego. And I remember talking to him after the game, and they signed Sean Merriman and Luis Castillo in that class. And the Cowboys signed me and DeMarcus Ware. And we were supposed to be a part of this young crop of guys that were coming in to transition over into a 3-4 defense. And I'll never forget what he told me at the end of the game. He said, "Man, I think you're a hell of a player. We happy with the guys that we have, but you're going to have a long, successful career in this league." And I just remember hearing that from Coach Marty Schottenheimer and realizing, like, this is somebody that knows this game thoroughly, telling you that you can have a lot of success in this league. So you could imagine what that did for a young football player in your career. So I'm thankful that I got a chance to spend that time with him, and I'm thankful for the words that he gave me after we competed against the San Diego Chargers when I was with the Cowboys.
Marcus, you talk about the words that he gave you. The words that he gave so many people were incredible. Marty had as large a vocabulary as any head coach I've ever heard. And I used to cover the Broncos for years, and he coached in Kansas City, and he coached with the Chargers. And so twice a year, we'd be on lengthy conference calls with him, not to mention the games that we got to cover and share with him. There was nobody that spoke as eloquently and as intelligently as Marty Schottenheimer. And here was a man who always had his teams ready to play. He's the 7th winningest coach in NFL history. His teams always played to their potential. The postseason, they struggled, and it's unfortunate that he never got to go to the big game, because the reaction he would have gotten there would have been like the one that Andy Reid got last year, another Chiefs coach that wound up succeeding Marty Schottenheimer in Kansas City. He was intelligent, he was insightful, he was philosophical, and he was a lot of fun to listen to, and he left an impact on a lot of young men.
Adam, to your point, what a legacy. Schottenheimer provided consistency as a head coach, leading his team to the playoffs in 13 of his 21 seasons as a head coach. Our condolences to his family. We've got more NFL Live coming up after this.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. Houston says he's not going anywhere. The situation extremely complicated, but it can also be traced back to one simple request Watson had: to have more ownership over decisions made in the front office and beyond. Well, it seems like Russell Wilson has that same request. Listen to this from today.
Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that,
do you want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
That from the Dan Patrick Show this morning. Marcus, does it surprise you the guys like Watson and Wilson want more input?
It doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is the fact that this is not normal operating procedure. When you have a franchise guy that you have made the face of your franchise. Like, I want to talk about this from an expert analyst level, and I want to act like I know it, but I don't. I got to ask my counterpart, D.O. He's been in quarterback rooms. Dan, is this not operating procedure for a franchise guy to not have input on offensive philosophy, coaches, and personnel that they bring in? I'm not going to pretend to act like I know. I would have assumed that Tony Romo, when I was in Dallas, had some kind of input on what they were doing offensively from a strategy standpoint. So take this one, bro, because I can't act like I know this one.
Yeah, I mean, I was around two really good quarterbacks, one being Peyton Manning and one being Matthew Stafford. Both of them had plenty of input. I know that Matthew would sit in on head coach interviews, offensive coordinator interviews. I think the reality is people need to understand this. There's only a handful of guys, not a handful of guys, but there's this role is not for everybody. This is a role that is earned, and you've got to earn your stripes with the ability to prove yourself as a player to your organization to warrant wanting input. But people also need to understand that the vantage point of a player is different than a general manager. Players often think about like the now, where general managers have to think long term. I will say this, specifically to quarterbacks. No one in the NFL watches more tape than quarterbacks. No one knows more about players, what they do well and what they do poorly, than quarterbacks. So organizations should 100% be doing that.
Well, listen, Dan, you're right. Those are all great points. Absolutely. And even though other quarterbacks have been involved in other personnel decisions, I don't remember Peyton Manning advertising that. I don't remember Tony Romo advertising that. And I don't remember a quarterback expressing his desire to be more involved in those personnel decisions. And so we'll go back to what we talked about earlier. This sounds like Russell Wilson taking little subtle digs. Digs at the organization, little messages, things that he wants done differently, things that haven't gone the way that he would like, things that he would like to see changed in the future. All part of that conversation and narrative from today.
Yeah, you know, Dan, you were mentioning that there is so select few quarterbacks who can really demand this type of input. I think we can all agree that Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson are on that list, right? And that's their work that they put in and also their level of play. And Mina, when you think about what Tom Brady put together or had a piece in, at least, bringing together for Tampa Bay to win the Super Bowl, a lot of this has to do with that, too, right?
Yeah, I mean, we just spent the last 24 hours talking about how Tom Brady built this dream team and how New England should have listened to him more. That's a standard I think other elite quarterbacks deserve. You can't ask these guys to sign long-term extensions. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to be with Kansas City for the next century, basically, and be the face of the franchise and then not expect them to want a voice in the direction of the franchise. Now, it also means they deserve accountability. If they're pushing to sign guys who don't work out, that mistake does fall on their shoulders, the same as it would anyone in the front office. And it doesn't mean they're the GM. It just means they should be listened to. I do want to go back to Watson for a second there, because we're talking about him in the context of this quarterback empowerment or involvement discussion. And we're right to say, you know, he wanted to be involved in picking, not picking, but at least having a voice in the selection of the next head coach and whatnot. But it's important to note that's not the only reason why Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. This is an organization that has been dysfunctional for years now. I think it would be a mistake to say, well, he didn't get what he wanted and they're not listening to him as a head coach and that's why he wants out. There are many reasons why he wants out of there, and they are valid ones.
Let me hit a slippery slope for Russell Wilson, you know, because Russell's come out today now and said that he's tired of getting hit, right? And Marcus made a great point that now puts nationally, like, the offensive line on blast, so to speak. But then him saying that like, they have to get better, and then saying he wants more input in personnel decisions, I got to say, guys, like, I also think it's putting John Schneider on blast a little bit too, right? So, like, right now Russell Wilson has come out and made two very bold comments that the NFL is full of a lot of alpha males. And if I'm John Schneider, the general manager, I'm saying, wait, like, are you saying that I'm not doing my job good enough right now? Like, and that you can do it better, or that you think your input is better than mine? Like, I think this is a really slippery slope, and I think Shefty's right. This is very strategic, what he's trying to do.
Just a reminder on the strategy here. Russell Wilson appeared on the Dan Patrick Show this morning. That's where a lot of these comments came from, including the one that we just saw. Then called a press conference that was not scheduled previously at 1:30 today around that time, and doubled down on all that. So the strategy seems to have multiple levels here. We'll be all over it.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bucks having some fun on Twitter today with their GOAT quarterback, posting that infamous Brady confusion on fourth down from earlier in the year with the caption, "How many playoff games did you win this year, Tom?" By the way, Jenna Lane, our Bucks reporter, tweeting that the Bucks will have a celebration boat parade for the team tomorrow. That's something that the Lightning actually did after they won the Stanley Cup. That's really fun when you're in Tampa and you can have a boat parade to celebrate. Must be nice. We're all surrounded by snow. All right, Dan, you went into the Super Bowl saying Brady's communication at the line of scrimmage would be huge. How did that show itself on Sunday?
Yeah. Showed up where it mattered the most, you know, in comparison to what was week 12, and it was a disaster. I remember being down in Tampa showing all those tapes that they did this poorly and this poorly and this poorly. And then when they needed it on that 3rd-and-2 right before the half, it was great between Brady and then his old reliable. So go back to 2nd down, right? They throw that quick little screen out to Chris Godwin. First of all, I love the effort by Godwin because it takes it from 3rd-and-5 to really 3rd-and-2. Then Kansas City pops that timeout. Think about 2 weeks ago, NFC title game. Tampa takes the one before the half. Now Kansas City does. Now everyone really locked in at exactly what happens for this offense for Tampa Bay. This is what experience and a plan looks like at the line of scrimmage. Godwin's going to go in motion. Showed 2 weeks ago, when a guy goes in motion, defense doesn't adjust, anticipate pressure. Now watch Brady and Gronk at the bottom of the screen. Brady's going to point to him like, hey, look it, talk to me. Nonverbal. The guy over you. That's the answer. Now Gronk looks at him and says, hey, if that guy blitzes, you're my answer. This is perfect. Ball out on that back shoulder with that corner squatting right there, and that gets him that first down. Guys, that didn't show up in week 12. In week 12, we showed clip after clip of them not doing that. If they don't make that conversion, they don't get that deep shot PI, and they don't get the touchdown right before half, we could have a very different ball game. The little thing of communication at the line showed off between vet, and in many ways really swings the momentum of that football game.
Yeah, and if you're a player around Brady, you're probably so thankful for that communication too, giving everyone the answers before the play even happens. All right, did you guys see this? ESPN released its power rankings for the 2021 season. Here's a look at the teams that took the top five spots. Uh-oh, people are going to be mad. Despite a crushing loss in Super Bowl 55, the Chiefs still come in at number one, the Bills coming in at number two, followed by the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and then it's defending Super Bowl champs, the Buccaneers, at number four. The Rams round out the top five, headlined by, of course, their new quarterback, Matthew Stafford. Mina, first of all, I'm here live. I'm not a cat. Secondly, people should be furious about these rankings, right? Really angry.
Love you, Laura Rutledge. I think the rankings, like the actual teams are fine. I would put Tampa at number two, the Super Bowl champion, for a couple of reasons. Yes, they've got some looming free agents, Shaq Barrett, Levante David, Chris Godwin. A lot of these teams do. They also have cap space to sign them. The secondary is young, and this is really important. The offensive line, which I feel like has gotten lost in the conversation about the Super Bowl, how excellent they are, they're staying together. The coaching staff is staying together. This offense didn't peak until the end of the season. So the Chiefs' motto was run it back. I think Tampa's positioned to do the same.
Listen, it can be that. And I understand why you say that, Mina, based on what we just mentioned. But I can't act like I'm not paying attention to what's happening in L.A. Y'all know, I've said all season long, I do not trust Jared Goff. I put that on record a long time ago. I still stand by that. This, to me, is a significant upgrade for the Los Angeles Rams. And we're talking about a team that's already really good. We're talking about a team that's not far removed from being in the Super Bowl. We know how star-studded they are on the other side of the ball defensively with Aaron Donald and obviously Jalen Ramsey and even a bunch of guys stepping up. I cannot wait to see Matt Stafford with the Los Angeles Rams. And I pray we have an offseason so these guys can get continuity and we can start seeing remnants of that during the first regular season game. But I'm not ready to jump on this Tampa train just yet. Matt Stafford is in L.A., y'all.
All right, so Marcus is putting the Rams in the Super Bowl. There we go. We called it right now. We got so much more coming your way on NFL Live.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Glad you're with us here on NFL Live. Ooh, Dallas drama. Look at Dak Prescott. Now, listen, you're seeing Dak Prescott here, but how about this? The Dallas Cowboys released on social media a big hype video to get everybody all excited for the season. Guess who was missing? Yeah, Dak Prescott, their star quarterback. What's up with that? All right, Marcus, is this a big deal?
Okay, so yes. In the context of what we've watched transpire with Dak over the past few off seasons, this is a big deal because it's a part of messaging. It's a part of all of the things that we've heard about the Dallas Cowboys. It's about all of the relationship problems that we perceive based on no deal being done and all of these things transpiring. Now, with that being said, I made some calls and I talked to some people from the Dallas Cowboys, and they explained to me that this was an error. This was not intentional. This was nothing that came from the front office. This was not about sending a message that Dak Prescott will not be the Cowboys quarterback. This was literally a mistake. It was deemed as a mistake because Dak Prescott should have been in there by that department. So I'm going to let y'all do what y'all do with that. It settled my spirit by hearing that information. It settled me down. But it is such bad timing. It is so poor in optics. And this is not going to help this conversation moving forward about Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I love insider Marcus Spears.
I mean, hello, Sheppy, there we go. Wait, everyone's been talking about this all day long, and Marcus just puts the whole thing to bed. I do think it's funny sometimes that people think, oh, yeah, the front office and the social media department are, like, directly tied. A lot of times they're totally different parts of an organization. Adam, now that we know that this was a mistake,
seriously,
let's move on to the actual conversation around
Step
Dak.
Your game up, Sheppy. Sheppy, step your game up, cuz.
To follow up on the outstanding NFL insider Marcus Spears, here's what I can tell you, that the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott were eligible to start doing a deal on January 3rd, once the regular season ended. And so once again, we're in the same spot that we've been in last year and the year before, waiting to see if and when Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys want to do a new deal. Now, stop me if you've heard this one before. Dallas wants him there. He wants to be there. And yet, no progress, no deal. It continues to go on and on and on. And now they're making videos without him. And Marcus Spears is clarifying the situation, and we appreciate having all the help that we do on board. Thank you, Mr.
But
Insider.
You in my wheelhouse now, though. We in my wheelhouse now. Now I'm ready. Like, we can get past that social media thing. I'm ready. I'm sorry, Mina, but I had to say that. I'm ready now. Now we're talking about what I want to talk about.
I need you to put in some calls to your Seahawks sources and get back to us tomorrow, Marcus. Here's what I find. First of all, Adam's point that they've been eligible, or Dak, they've been able to sign a deal for a while now. I think that is telling and important because the team has been dragging their feet on this for years. They've also been talking out of both sides of their mouth when it comes to Dak Prescott for years. Some days, he's the future of the organization. He's our quarterback. We love him. Other days, they're speaking ill of him, frankly, or leaking, you know, his trade or his salary demands. It feels very inconsistent, and it's a mess. It's a mess of their own making, the product of bad contract decisions they've made along the way that we saw play out during the regular season. Like, you can see the players, you can identify the ones who did get big deals instead of Dak, and a lot of those contracts look really bad. So my only hope now is that they make a decision on this, they are consistent, they get a long-term deal done, or tag him, trade him, and move on. But stop dragging your feet on this, Dallas, because it's getting messy and it's like a little embarrassing.
Thank you.
All right, first of all, actions speak louder than words, okay? That being said, maybe the Cowboys' actions have been right all along. Maybe that they've handled this better than we've given them credit for. So Philly and Los Angeles are both in a little bit of a unique situations because they paid their quarterbacks really early. We all said, pay Dak. Not we, but a lot of you guys said, pay Dak. And they haven't. And while they don't have their solution right now, they have way more flexibility than those other two teams. Now, I need you guys to tell me, like, what the heck has happened that makes you think that they are going to pay Dak Prescott more money than they would have last year with less money to do it, since the salary cap is going to be less? Like, what makes you guys think, what has transpired over the last year, other than the horrific injury, that makes you say the Cowboys won't be the Rams or the Eagles in 2 years from now by overpaying for their quarterback?
So, Dan, let's settle it all now. Let's tie it all together. Let's trade Dak Prescott for Russell Wilson and have an off-season bonanza of stories to talk about.
Let's.
Wow.
Well, Adam, collecting my thoughts, Marcus Spears, channeling my inner Marcus Spears. Trying to keep track of all the outrageous things you just said there. I'm going to start with Philly and Los Angeles. We're still going to pretend like Dak Prescott is not a significantly better quarterback than Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, based on what we've seen over the last 2 years. We're really, like, am I in a time machine? Are we really still having this conversation?
Wait, Mina.
Second.
Mina, did you watch?
You like that trade or not? Mina, as a Seahawks fan, you doing that trade or not?
I am not, because the Seahawks would be paying $40 million on top of Dak's salary in dead cap money. So, So there's that. The other thing is, you asked, what have we seen from Dallas? They sucked. They sucked without him.
Mina, they were 8-8 the year before with him. They scored 27 points a game with him. They scored 25 this year. Like, where were they so much better? They went 8-8 with him, 6-10 without him. They scored 27 points a game in 2019. They scored 25 points a game this year.
What quarterback should they go after? Dan?
They could go after Deshaun Watson. They can go after the draft. They can go after Russell Wilson. They can go after Derek Carr.
He's losing his mind.
Well,
Marcus, settle this for us.
Is Dak Prescott better than Jared Goff and Carson Wentz?
Many quarterbacks want to play in Dallas.
Everybody that's watched football.
Go ahead, Shefty.
Everybody that's watched football. So, let me get this straight. The Cowboys are smart for not paying Dak because of what's happening with Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. So when in the hell do we ever pay a quarterback? When is he supposed to get paid then? After he puts up
when he shows
numbers,
that he's a complete
after
difference maker.
After he proves how important he is to the franchise.
Tell me when.
Hey, guess what?
He was one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL a year ago.
We got weeks to discuss this.
Yes.
This dude.
We're going to keep talking about it. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be all over NFL Live. I love it.